Welcome, families. This is Crystal Sanford, your host for Thriving Special Families, your weekly show where we offer insight, humor, and hope along your special needs parenting journey. Today, our topic will be helping preschool learners to thrive. And I'm so happy to have our special guest today, Amy Salazar. Hi, Amy.
Hello.
Thanks so much for being here with us today. Families, if you are listening to us on our podcast, then welcome to the Thriving Special Families family. If you are watching us live, families, then welcome as well. Please feel free to add your questions to the comments and chat section, and we will do our best to answer those live for you here today. Also, parents, know that in our podcast and in our weekly live show, the information that you hear is for your informational purposes only and should not be construed as advice in the medical or legal field. Please do speak with a specialist in that area if you have questions or need of advice. And lastly, our show is sponsored by Sanford Autism Consulting, where we offer IEP advocacy and hope for your child's education. So again, our topic today is helping preschool learners to thrive. And if you have a preschooler, let us know in the comments, how old is your little one that you are parenting with unique needs? I can remember back when my daughter, who was on the autism spectrum, was a preschooler. That's when she first got identified with autism and began to receive early intervention services. And so, Amy, I just want to say thank you to people like you who do provide those excellent services to our little ones.
Thank you. It's my pleasure. It's my pleasure to be here. I'm excited to dive into today's topic.
Great. Awesome. So let me please first give a proper introduction to Amy. Amy Salazar is the regional director for here in Greater San Diego area. Amy has been with JUVO since 2014, providing services in East Contra Costa County before expanding to San Diego. Amy's background is in social services, and she's passionate about increasing access to quality care to individuals from diverse backgrounds and using evidence-based procedures to provide individualized care to each client. So that's a mouthful, but I really just applaud you for your passion and for what you do with families, Amy. Amy holds her bachelor's degree in sociology, and she's completed her master's of education degree in curriculum and instruction and applied behavior analysis, and she's a board certified behavior analyst. So we have an expert here who will be able to share. Amy, you know, I was able to share a little bit about, you know, who you are and what you've done, but I love to hear people's story, and I really value story. So can you just share a little bit about what brought you to the field of behavior analysis and helping children with unique needs?
Yeah, so I come from a large family. There's always been a lot of cousins, siblings running around. And so, you know, just working, and I have a deep love for my own family, but just working with children and having that be a part of my early on experience as growing up into adulthood, I knew that I always wanted a career supporting families. I really find that families are such a pillar in a child's life and can, you know, there's something so special about every single family dynamic. No two families are the same. No two children are the same. And so as I was going through my schooling and my education, I got a job as a behavior technician with an ABA agency at Support Services currently now. And I really fell in love with the field of ABA, just in the approach of really looking attentively at each child that we were supporting and working within the home environment and looking at the needs of every family and really tapping into the strengths and individual characteristics of each family. And again, it was really in that position that I just fell in love with ABA or applied behavior analysis and seeing, you know, progress being made or seeing that with every family or every child that I would work with, there would be various challenges or, you know, hardships to have to overcome. And then working really closely with these families to overcome that or to teach a new skill or work through a challenging behavior. You know, there's nothing like meeting those small milestones, right? And so when you see your clients thrive, that was so encouraging to me, and just, you know, it affirmed me in the passion that I have for the field. And I'm very thankful to have been with JUVO over the years and supporting a great number of families from diverse backgrounds or socioeconomic places. And, you know, that's something that I'm really passionate about and enjoy doing and enjoy giving back to my local community, because I think that, you know, our children are the future, for lack of a better term or phrase. It's just investing in them and seeing what the future has in store for them. So.
That's great. You know, I applaud you for that. And I love to hear stories where, you know, you hear about like the lady, she was the secretary and then she eventually became the CEO, you know, and so here you are, you know, you started as a behavior tech and now here you are a regional director. That's awesome. And such a need for our children with unique needs. So families, if you are parenting a preschooler, please do let us know in the comments, how old is your child and any questions that you have along the way. But so Amy, our topic today is helping preschool learners to thrive. And I can remember back again when my daughter was 3 and a half, she was diagnosed and she went through some early intervention services preparing her for kindergarten. And that was a great time for us, a great learning time. But I just can't imagine going through that now during school closures and COVID and preschool closures. So I look to you, tell us, what's a tip that you have for parents who are parenting preschoolers right now? How can they help their child learn even at home?
Of course. I think, you know, you said it very well, right? Right now, we are in very much so unprecedented times when it comes to having to, as a parent, provide instruction or help to keep up with, or just providing some semblance of structure for our little ones when, you know, this is an age when they are learning and acquiring so many different skills. And, you know, so something that I really encourage the families that I work with to do is to start small, right? Like, I think there's a big desire for parents to want to take on everything. And oh my goodness, my child's daycare is now closed. We're no longer seeing those services. I need to be my child's preschool teacher now, right? And I think with so many different burdens or so many different stressors happening in today's day and age, right? I think it's really, we don't want parents to be burnt out. We want to encourage parents to take on and start small with whatever type of structure it is that they're going to be putting into place for their little ones, right? So if that is setting aside 5 minutes to read a book together and have it be a circle time, or, you know, putting in a daily routine with just some simple structure of, okay, first we're going to get dressed, then we're going to do breakfast, then we're going to have puzzle time, and then have fun for the rest of the day, right? What are those little baby steps that we can introduce and embed into a daily routine to start small? Because that's going to set those expectations really clear for your little one, as well as making it something that as a parent we can keep up with, right? We can somehow manage keeping a daily schedule or making it small and embedding it into the routines that we have for ourselves. That way, when we want to potentially add more to it, right, we already have a foundation that is in place for our littles.
That's so great. You know, thank you for considering that, right? Because parents have so much on their plate right now. So I love that. Make it, take small steps, make it something that really fits well into your current schedule already, but it does somehow tie to what the expectations will be when your child returns to school. So I love that. You know, all schools have schedules. So, you know, creating a simple little schedule at home is nice. You can even make it, you know, I talked to one lady and she said, make it colorful in pictures, you know, and have your child to decorate it. That's all can be helpful to get their buy-in to the schedule. I want to give a shout out here to Shannon. Shannon's a mom of a five-year-old with her last year in preschool. So what advice do you have for our, maybe our older kiddos, they're littles, but they are preparing for the transition into kinder and maybe a transition back onto a campus?
Yeah, absolutely. I think some of the most success that I've seen in those transitions, right? Getting ready from preschool to TK. I mean, this can happen in a pre-COVID world, a current COVID world, and a post-COVID world, right? Those transitions are always going to be upcoming. And I think for as we prepare to make those transitions would be to give jobs to that five-year-old, right? So for example, with the routine of putting together your backpack so it's ready for the next day of school, right? Give them a job of picking out a book to put in their backpack, right? Or make sure that they put their backpack in a specific place, and talking with them about what is going, the changes that are going to be upcoming, right? It doesn't have to be this long speech that you give your child or your five-year-old about this is what school is going to be like, but just little reminders of, hey, at school, remember your teacher's name is Miss Amy, or, you know, when we need help, you can raise your hand and ask for help. Let's practice. You show me. Say, I need help. I need help. Thank you. Oh, great job. Right. So we're practicing some of those key skills to help increase their independence. Right. Those little things of giving them a job to do, of organizing their backpack, or teaching them how to ask for help so they know what to expect in that classroom environment. Right. Those are little things that we can do to help, again, increase their independence and help them be more successful in making that transition.
That's awesome. I love that. So, you know, giving them those little jobs, you know, that's just great anyway, in helping build those self-help skills and independent skills, but even more so in preparing for the school environment where there will be, you know, jobs, and kiddos have little jobs to do, and they're expected to do a little bit more for themselves. I think that's a great, great recommendation there. Amy, tell us about your work with children who are littles, but they have more impacted needs. Are there things that these parents can do if they're parenting, for example, a child on the spectrum who is maybe non-speaking or still having, you know, toileting issues or having some significant behaviors? What advice do you have for parents with children like that?
Absolutely. I think when it comes to maybe children that have more intensive needs, with some delays such as toileting, right, I would really recommend the parents of coordinating or collaborating really well with their school team, right? Having those conversations as the school year, as those transitions are happening, right? If you know what your child's favorite snacks, maybe favorite characters or favorite books to read or activities, what do they like to do, right? Have that ready to share with the school team, right? That way, you know, whatever barriers or challenges may come in the day-to-day transition to school, your school team can coordinate with you and collaborate with you as a parent to say, okay, we want to help, you know, this child be more independent in toileting. This is what it looks like at school. Maybe what are the ways that we can get creative to help increase that independence? You know, I think specifically with toileting, right, this is one that I would definitely encourage families to, you know, potentially seek out additional help or support or guidance from an ABA provider or a behaviorist, because we can really look in at those individual needs of the child to be able to work on some of those learner readiness skills, even for those learners that are maybe more impacted or have more significant delays, right? We want to see all of our students have access to quality education and be more independent in a classroom environment. Really coordinating with the school team to help get those needs met or to look at those areas that need to be addressed to create more of that success or independence.
I love that. I love that learner readiness skills. That's wonderful. You know, because I'm a big proponent that every child can learn regardless of where they fall on an autism spectrum or on a diagnosis of any kind. I believe that every child has the capacity to learn given the right supports and services, and in their own way, in their own time, I believe they can learn. So I love that, looking at no matter where the child is, where are their learner readiness skills for behaviors and skills that they need? And starting with that and making some small steps and some small gains, you know, you'll probably see. And I also agree, like you said, you know, in my advocacy practice, I talk a lot about knowing your child, and especially as you've been home with your child during, you know, school closures, preschool closures, things that you found out, being transparent and sharing that with the team so that the team can use, like you said, those favorite toys, those favorite things as possible motivators to support your child during their school day. Yeah, that's wonderful. So, you know, Amy, I think that there are many parents who have been at home and they probably have wondered, you know, how much do I really focus in on education and, you know, really trying to educate my child at home who's 3 and 4, and compared to I'm just trying to survive, you know, the day to day of working at home and being at home, doing everything at home. So, you know, where do you say parents should go? And when they're considering that, you know, education and heavy academic focus versus, you know, just maintaining daily life at home with the preschooler.
Absolutely. I think that that is incredibly, it's very much so an individual sized problem, right? Or it has to be a very individualized approach to it. Every family is different and every family is has different areas of needs, is impacted by the pandemic in different, all sorts of ways, right? Some have experienced it in incredible hardships, and others are, you know, they're maintaining, they're doing okay. And so I think it's really dependent on what is happening for that family in that household, right? Right now, there are plenty of stressors happening in the world. And, you know, while some families may be able to have other helpers, other grandparents, aunts, uncles help in on a day-to-day, or caregivers be able to support that little one while mom and dad are working, or while parents are preoccupied or having to take care of other needs for the household, and other families, it's just about maintaining, right? And I think in either case, it's okay, right? I think right now there's a lot of grace for people. There's a lot of understanding for circumstances that are going on. And I think that's where I just go back to my initial point of just start small, right? Really take an inventory of where your family is at, and what are, you know, where are the areas that we want, you know, your child, or you see as an area of need, or maybe you want your child to develop these skills. Okay, let's start page 1.1, right? No need to take on the whole dictionary or the whole book. We can just start small and then build from there, right? So if that means setting aside 5 minutes to read a book, or, you know, setting aside 10 minutes to do a shape puzzle or a shape sorter of some sort, doing some sort of structured activity with your child, then go for it. If you have the liberty or the freedom or the space to be able to add in more and to embed more structure to the day-to-day, then absolutely highly encouraged to do so. And I think as we look at transitioning littles back to school or being in in-person learning, it's looking at, okay, what are those fundamental basic things that I want my child to do when they transition to school? I think some of the biggest components of that learner readiness is, okay, let's be able to sit down and listen to a 3-minute story. Let's be able to ask for help, right? Raising your hand and knowing how to ask for help from the teacher. Where are they at with toilet training, right? Do we have independence in that? Can they ask to go to the bathroom? Do they still need to be prompted to go to the bathroom? Where do they fall in some of those more independent skills? Because that's going to, that can be an area of focus as we prepare to transition back to school, and can be something that we start to address at home. That way, by the time we make that transition to a classroom environment or a preschool environment, where those little bits of progress having been made.
That's great, because that was going to be my next question. You're right on it. It's like, what should parents expect in regards to a little one at home? I think sometimes we're so used to navigating life with our child with unique needs that maybe we're not as aware of what are the typical expectations. So you talked about, you know, a little one under five, around getting to 3, 4, 5, should be able to sit and listen to a story. You know, they should be able to ask for help and the toileting. You know, I think back to my years being a speech pathologist. They should be able to navigate play to some degree, some parallel play, at least with a peer, and beginning to learn how to, you know, share and compromise and using language that way. You know, I think about that as well, being able to communicate, you know, in 4-word, 5-word utterances, getting to that place as well for a little. So these are things that parents can work on, you know, talking about their thinking, talking about feelings. And that's something that goes on a lot in, you know, preschools. You know, talking about feelings and the social emotional component, I think it can also be a space. Do you have any tips for that area?
Yeah, I think one of the things that you just touched on that I love that you mentioned was learning that happens through play, right? Mm-hmm. So much. I think one of the biggest hardships that a lot of my families that I work with are having to work through right now is, you know, we're just at home. It's just our family. Maybe there's a sibling or two or three or four. Maybe it's just that child and adults. And so much of that social interaction is now missing from a day-to-day life, right? So, you know, I encourage parents to, you know, if there's a family friend or someone who is in your social bubble, right, making those arrangements to have a play date if you can. And if not, I think it's absolutely appropriate for parents to engage in learning through play with their little one, right? So doing pretend play, asking for an item, you know, doing some sharing or cooperative play, or teaching your child how to play with the same toys in a new way, right? Like, I love using, you know, say if you have a kitchen play set, all of a sudden the skillet becomes a drum, right? Or a maraca, right? So using some play materials in a really unique way, because so much of that does cultivate learning in a creative way, right? And it's not set to a firm structure of, you know, okay, let's sit down and read this book for 5 minutes. Or it's it's instruction that we're providing, but it just looks slightly different, right? Mm-hmm. And it's something that we can vary on a daily basis or kind of mix it up as the days progress.
That's so good. And I think that can give parents like a bit of a like relief, because for some parents, mm-hmm. like sitting and reading a book with their kid, maybe it's just not their go-to. But, you know, throwing a ball with them or, you know, playing pretend play or doing a craft if the parent is creative, those things some parents can get into. So thanks for sharing that. I also want to say again, parents, if you're watching us and just joining us, welcome to another episode of Thriving Special Families, where our topic today is helping preschool learners to thrive. And our guest today is Amy Salazar of JUVO Autism and Behavioral Services. And we have a few shout outs again. We have another guest who's watching. And then another parent who has a six-year-old going into first grade who's a little bit nervous. And again, I think some of the tips that we shared about our kids transitioning to kinder could be super helpful. Like you said, having jobs and kind of preparing them in that way, preparing them for getting their backpack, organization, those things can be helpful as our kids are a little bit older getting into kinder and first. And so I'd love to hear, Amy, the last thing is a success story. You know, I know you've been working with families for a while. During the at the time of this recording, we are just really kind of coming out of school closures, just starting on the brink of being able to get kids back into a preschool or learning environment. So what have you seen in success regarding preschoolers at home?
Absolutely. I think one of my most recent was working with a family. The child was TK, getting ready to go into kindergarten. This was a child that is diagnosed with autism spectrum disorder, also has a few other delays. And this child, they, for prior to introducing services and working with this family, they were toilet trained, but didn't know how to initiate going to the bathroom, right? So they, if the parent asked them, hey, do you need to go to the bathroom? They would say, yeah, and then go on their merry way. But they were constantly relying on parents' feedback or prompting to get them to the bathroom. And with this family, right, this child was already 4.5, 5 years old, getting older. And it was a high area of concern because as we prepare to go back to the classroom, right, parents want that child to be more independent. And so we were able to put into place a plan for that, for the parents as well as the child, of how do we work on increasing this child and their ability to independently, without being asked, go to the bathroom. So we put into place just a small token board, right, of earn 5 tokens and then you get a treasure from the treasure box, right? And we were able to explain to the child and just have it had some colorful visuals, some clear expectations of, you know, pee-pee in the potty means treasure in the treasure box, right? And really making it clear. And if mom asks you to go to the bathroom, you earn 1 little purple star. But if you go and on your own and you tell us you need to go to the bathroom, you automatically get 5 gold stars, right? And made it really big, tie in that incentive, right? Eyes got this big. So we worked with the parents to work, see what were going to be those items in the treasure box, right? This was a child that, you know, got pretty bored of things very quickly. So we had to vary it up, or, you know, parents had maybe 3 different things in rotation that they put in the treasure box and it was like a mystery, right? So again, really playing on those motivators or those things of interest for the child to see, okay, what are the things that we could work on or be in that treasure box that would be worth his while, right? What are the things that he would be worth working for, right? Nobody likes to work for free. So what were the things that we could put into that treasure box? And, you know, over the course of, I believe it was 3 weeks or so, we were able to coach parents on how to, you know, fade out their own prompt, right? Because sometimes as a mom or as a parent, we want to say, do you need to go to the bathroom? Especially right. if it's something that we're so used to doing, yeah. having to work with mom and dad and saying, okay, like this time, let's not say, do you want, but maybe you can point to the visual instead or say a mm-hmm. reminder. Right. And so giving parents those tools of what to do instead. And now the child, I'm happy to report, is fully independent and going to the bathroom. And so this was something that we practiced at home during the school closures. And now as we prepare to transition back into school, we're happy to tell the school team, hey, like this is what we have been doing at home. If he's accident free all day, he gets a treasure from his treasure box. So make sure you use those same words, or here's a visual that you can use. That mm-hmm. way it's something similar that the child can see, recognize, and know the expectation for when he does go to school. you know, the school team can remind him of, ooh, the treasure box is coming up. Definitely been a journey with this little one and with this family, but you know, we're really excited. Again, it's all about that independence and making that transition and collaboration with the school team as soon as possible while also supporting a family at home during this time.
That's awesome. So kudos to you guys, first of all. I'm sure, you know, it could feel like a small thing, but it can also feel like a big thing, you know, to just be at potty training or whatever, to be able to come to a place where your child is independent or has, you know, moved on and is not doing a behavior or doing a behavior. Those little wins can be so powerful. So, you know, it's so awesome that you were able to help that family in that way. One other thing I want to piggyback on is that what you said about sharing that information with the team. Again, like I said, as I work with, as an advocate with families, it's so meaningful to be able to share that kind of information with teams so that the language is consistent and the child's hearing the same things at home that he's hearing at school. And that's where we really see the most movement. So, you know, so that's great. I'm so glad that you were able to share that with the families as well. And sending this child off back into some type of a school environment, being potty trained is amazing.
Yeah, it was definitely a wonderful accomplishment, right? It's all about those little victories and some, but potty training is a big mountain to climb, right? Yeah. So that's the one that I'm always tooting about and always shouting out about because it is definitely a great accomplishment for this little one.
Yeah, it's so awesome. That's so great. Well, you know what, Amy, what if we have some parents who are watching and or listening and they would say, my child is struggling with potty training or with whatever behavior it might be. How can parents find out more about you and your services?
Absolutely. So you can reach me. My email is, I know Crystal will share it into the comments. It's amy.salazar@juvobh.com. Also, if you're just curious about behavioral services or ABA, feel free to go to our website, juvobh.com. There you'll see a multitude of resources, what locations we're currently serving. So we are centralized, or our main region is up in the greater San Francisco Bay Area, but we have recently expanded services to Southern California, throughout San Diego County. So as far south as Imperial Beach, as far north as Oceanside, and even some inland. So we're really excited to be growing and developing our services and being able to support the community here in San Diego. So, you know, just thank you so much, everyone, for your time. And I'd be happy to answer any questions should something come up or, you know, take down my contact information. I'd love to be a resource to families as best as possible.
Oh, that's wonderful. Thank you for being available like that. Because I know things come up sometimes. You're like, oh, that, you know, my kid's doing well. And then all of a sudden, oh, I've got this question, this problem. And so parents, you know, listen to Amy, get her in contact information. Again, she's at JUVO Autism and Behavioral Services, now serving the San Diego County area. And if parents, if you do have some concerns about your child's IEP and that transition preschooler to having an IEP in a school district, then feel free to reach out to me as well. I serve families all day long. When it comes to IEPs and especially preschool transitions, you can reach out to me at info@sdautismhelp.com, or you can check out my website, sdautismhelp.com. So again, this has been another episode of Thriving Special Families. I'm your host, Crystal Sanford, and our topic has been helping preschool learners to thrive. Thank you so much again, Amy, for being here.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
Awesome. And parents, remember, your child's going to be okay and you're going to be okay. Thanks so much for watching. Bye-bye.